Welcome to Copcast, the podcast of YEP about personal growth and leadership. In every podcast, we will interview an inspiring guest about his or her experience and views in developing skills and capacities of young people. My guests will also give practical tips and recommendations in how to apply their lessons and insights into your daily work and life. YEP is the acronym of the Young Expert Programs, a partnership of the Dutch Ministry of Foreign Affairs with the Netherlands Water Partnership. My name is Paul van Koppen. I am a trainer and coach at YEP and a consultant in the international water sector. Today, my guest is Wouter Linkland-Ariens. On LinkedIn, Wouter mentions himself as Coach Wouter, CEO and founder of TransformationFirst.Asia, to help his clients discover how to overcome their problems by transforming first. Wouter is an international thought leader, author, speaker, facilitator, trainer and mentor, and he has worked with local communities, professionals, entrepreneurs, bureaucrats, journalists, ministers, executives and royalty. He has worked at the Asian Development Bank for 2 decades. He has led many change initiatives in Asia, including a doubling of the bank's water investments up to $2 billion annually. Wouter is also a former monk. His style is warm and insightful, bringing a rare blend of East and West cultural backgrounds to his coaching skills. Wouter, a warm welcome. What a long list. Interesting.
Thanks, Paul. Great to be on your show.
Wouter, it's good maybe to mention we know each other for quite many years, working in the water sector. But I was interested maybe also for our listeners. Could you tell a little bit more about your career and your main steps? Because in preparing this interview, I was, of course, intrigued by your statement of being a former monk, a monk who went to water, and from water you went to coaching. Please, go ahead.
Right. Well, the monk part came somewhere down the river. So the water choice was already made. You know, it really started for me, Paul, when I was about 16 years old.
Okay.
You know, our country, the Netherlands, is great, but not big, not large, right? It's a small country. And I had this dream, I had this vision that I wanted to work internationally. And I wanted to find a place where I could make a difference, perhaps more than was clear to me or than I could envision doing that in the Netherlands. So I had this drive to go outside. And I was thinking how to do that and where to go. And I ended up in the University of Wageningen, which is a place that has many faculties and disciplines. And I eventually graduated in tropical land and water management, because that would surely get me to the tropics, so to speak. Yeah. And that was what appealed to me. I chose water. I rolled into water because I have some affinity for water from my youth. But it was an interdisciplinary, it was a wide study in Wageningen, looking at all kinds of aspects of academic study, but in the water and land space.
Yeah.
And that's something that caught me early on and that has followed me through my career. I consider myself lucky. We were trained to develop multiple perspectives, including a sort of a transdisciplinary perspective, which I don't think that name existed yet at that time, but we were actually stimulated to develop solutions working with target groups.
Yeah. So. Okay. Thanks. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Of course, I think a lot of YEPers actually they know Wageningen. A lot of them have studied in Wageningen, so they will recognize your story. But I'm also intrigued. How did Asia came into your life? Was there a specific reason? Because you've always been, I think, working in Asia, wasn't it?
Yes. That's right. And. Of course, Asia is a place where many things happen. It's also incredibly diverse and rich cultural place. Yeah. And it's something that attracted me as well. Well, you can't go everywhere. So that's where I went. Yeah. And from one job, I rolled into the next. I worked with UNICEF. So after this multidisciplinary study on water in a more broader sense. I worked really at the ground level with UNICEF on community water supply, sanitation, hygiene, health. And then I went on to the Mekong River Commission, one of the biggest rivers in the world, crossing many countries, and looked at irrigation, but also river basin planning and, you know, hydrology, yeah, environmental studies, and so on.
Okay.
And from there on, I was actually recommended, because I thought I have pretty good grassroots experience by now. Where could I go to perhaps use that to influence larger projects, the quality and the impact of larger projects? And that's where the ADB, the Asian Development Bank, came on the scene.
Yeah.
And I moved there, here, yeah, in the Philippines, and I ended up, yeah, working in the vanguard, so to speak, of the water, yeah, operations there for 20 years.
Yeah, yeah, that's how our careers, I think our path crossed, eh? I think about 20 years ago or so, yeah. But I heard you say, kind of, you wanted to have some kind of influence. Was it correct? Was that one of your personal,
yes,
drivers? Yeah, yeah.
Yes, yeah, that's, yeah, right. Yeah. You could say I wanted to make a difference.
Yeah,
that would be one way, yeah, of saying it.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we come to that later, maybe in more detail. Thanks for this this description of your path. Before we go a bit to your present work, I would like to know a bit, how did you cope with the whole COVID-19 crisis? I know you lived in Asia. This has been going on already for 8 or 9 months. Could you say a little bit about your experiences?
Yeah, I would say there are two aspects that come to mind for me. One is that, from a leadership perspective, which is what I focus on in the work that I do, is that this is providing new opportunities for people who do have the drive and the energy, and who are not weighed down by too much fear or anxiety, like a lot of people are feeling at this time, a lot of uncertainty. So there's these two aspects. You know, there's the empathy, there's the chance to express our solidarity and inquire into the well-being of people. And a lot of people who do well normally, they are really facing shocks.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm experiencing that in my leadership and my coaching work. But, yeah, at the same time, there is that new windows of opportunity opening. And, you know, many people don't have to spend a lot of time in the traffic commuting, for example.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Could you maybe take a kind of lesson or insight or recommendation how to deal with these shocks? Because I think we were not used to those kind of shocks so far. Huh?
Yeah, that's a big question.
Yeah, big question. But
that's I would say with some self-awareness, it's an opportunity to double click on where you are and how you're experiencing the condition and, you know, the challenges we are in.
Yeah.
So that means you could say zooming out. You know, we are all Zoom experts now. So zooming out, maybe a bit from the challenges that you feel and seeing, well how am I doing? And it's this kind of self-awareness, and to practice that is, of course, one of the essentials, the foundations of leadership.
Yeah.
So I think that's one thing we can all do.
Yeah, and could you give a very specific practical tip how to do this? If you experience, you know, this shock or this uncertainty, the confusion, can you make it even more specific? What kind of tip or recommendation have you learned to promote more?
Yeah. Well, I put out insights on leadership, coaching, and other things. So just yesterday, I posted a post on my blog, and it's called The Three Leadership Blocks. And those are three practical blocks. They're actually ways in which, with a lower level of self-awareness, under challenge, under pressure, we are kind of sabotaging or blocking our own progress. And I call them the progress block, the purpose block, and the programs block. One of them is the first one. When we are experiencing a pandemic, a challenge like this, we can easily end up feeling stressed, anxious, and our life force, energy, our drive, our positive drive is just diminished. At least there can be times, and it depends on different people too. Yeah. So now, if you're not aware of that, then it's hard to double click on that and to help yourself correct that and see that in context. So that's where a very practical tip, and I put some question there in my blog to help help to do that.
Yeah, okay, thanks very much. Yeah, we will also make a reference on our website and the Basecamp platform, references to your website and also to your blog. I think it's interesting to have a further look at it. But I'm also then intrigued by, could you give a specific kind of new opportunity or innovation that you've seen emerge now more quickly or as a new kind of phenomenon because of the COVID-19 crisis?
Well, absolutely. We have figured out that we do not necessarily need to be in offices.
Yeah,
you know, it's fundamentally changed some of the paradigms of how our society and our workplaces are organized. So the future of work, where I think many of us had already a toe, you know, one foot maybe into the future of work, but that has just become available to many of us, but not to all of us. We must always keep that in mind. There's a digital divide. There are many people in the world who are not able to benefit from that advance from doing things online and so on. There are still people who have to walk, 4 hours, 5 hours just to go to school. So we must always keep in mind that this does not automatically apply to everyone. Yeah. And that's what the SDGs and the social divides that we're talking about, refer to.
Thanks for this. Yeah. I would like now to focus a bit more on your present work, Wouter. Of course, prepared a bit this interview. I know you for some longer. I think one of your main activities now is your CEO. You call it the practice of transformation first.asia. Maybe you can describe in general, what is transformation first.asia doing? What is the purpose?
Right. So, on this site, you can see my logo up here. And actually, that's the short story of it. What I discovered, and that's my philosophy, you can say, to address ourselves, how to live up to our potential, how to become a leader, an influencer. We cannot just be dependent on other people and conditions. And that's, of course, what a lot of people do in the world. They say, well, if only my boss was, nicer. If only I would be heard. Yeah. If only I had some more budget or some more time. But the point is, that's not how the world really works. People who make changes happen, they have that process of transforming themselves first, to ask themselves, what can I do and how can I change? And sometimes that change is quite fundamental. So it's, I call it more like a transformation than a change, to make a best contribution in this situation and to actually influence people. So, so the person is there transforming. And then the yellow golden arc is actually the influence that will go out once you do your own homework and you upgrade your own operating system and your skills and do a lot of practice.
Yeah. You label it, you refer to it on your website as coaching for transition. So you mentioned transforming yourself is important.
Right.
Is for you then... let's say personal leadership, because you're working a lot in developing leadership, is then the first key step is to be self-aware and transform yourself?
Yes. So I work with leaders of different ages, from executives, people in the, sort of more senior stages of life, all the way down to professionals, to emerging leaders, to young leaders. And through another organization, an NGO that I founded in memory of my daughter, I also work with high school leaders as well. And basically, it's all about the same thing. How do we develop ourselves to influence others for positive developments, to engage in positive changes in practice, not just in theory,
mm-hmm.
and to learn to do that together, and in the process to unlearn, some of the habits and mindsets that we learned earlier that are not terribly helpful today. And of course, the challenge there is that the more you have learned, the probably you also have more to unlearn.
Yeah, yeah. What was one of your personal lessons in this?
Well, the biggest lesson, I think, and also what I use in my training, is that we tend to think that we are the same. So that people we meet, they somehow think like us. And I learned that is not the case.
Yeah.
Of course, I wasn't the first one to learn that. But the point is, as Nelson Mandela said, we have to learn to speak the languages of different people with different kind of worldviews and mindsets.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that came as a transformational moment, a life-changing moment for me, to give the keys to actually help other people to solve situations better and to develop their leadership.
Yeah, yeah, I can very much recognize this. As a coach for YEP, I have worked with a lot of Asian coaches and African coaches and South American coaches, and a lot of differences. And you've been living so long in Asia, you must have a good view on those differences between those cultures. Huh? Yeah. And I'm just intrigued as well. You've been, I think, living or working maybe 20, 30 years already in Asia. Yeah. Is there a kind of shift there in terms of the differences over those 20, 30 years? Is the young generation more global, for instance? Or are we still having those different mindsets and different programming?
Yes, we of course, massive changes. And also some things that stay the same, some of the foundational aspects of life, which we all grow up in. And, it's a developmental psychologist will say that we all go through certain stages in our life, hopefully. Hopefully we also keep going through them and keep learning. So there is a lot of difference, cultural differences. And here's also where your earlier question about being a monk for some time came up. I did that in Thailand, and I really wanted to learn, to get the experience and to learn what it means to develop your self-awareness and, the middle way as Buddhism teaches us. On the changes that I find in working now with people, not only from Asia, but also from all the other continents, in fact, is that there's certainly a lot of rich diversity, like an intricate tapestry with different colors and different weaves. But there is more that is the same.
So, in common,
some of these worldviews that express themselves in our communication, in our behaviors, in our styles, you could call it a leadership style or a leadership language, they're actually uniform. Wherever I go and I work with leaders, I train and we work together, those are universal. So that's not so much subject to change.
Yeah, and can you give maybe one example of this kind of universal element in leadership?
Right. Well, there's the concept of hierarchy. Doing a task properly according to the right steps, respecting authority above you, being accountable, and having some sanctions if you're not doing well.
Yeah.
So that's a mindset that we encounter everywhere in the world. But the influence, it depends on the situation and on the project, organization, and definitely on individual people.
Whereas
other people would be more entrepreneurial, they would see opportunity. We talked about opportunity earlier, and they would really want to go for it. And they would also like to get some recognition as well.
Yeah,
that's a completely different mindset. And what we see is that often these mindsets are very different. The one that I just mentioned is more the private sector dominating mindset. But the first one I mentioned is often found in governments and in water organizations, which tend to be conservative and often risk averse.
No, I recognize this. Maybe looking a bit closer into the work of TransformationFirst.Asia. I've studied your website. I've seen some kind of different elements in your work. Academies mentioned, services. Can you give a little bit more insight in what you're doing in practical terms?
I would say the deepest work I do is in individual leadership coaching. And sometimes that's with executives, as I mentioned, different age groups, different level of positions. But it's that space where you work over 3 months. I call it Leader in Transition program, where people want to get promoted or aspire to have a higher position with more responsibility. Or they are going through another kind of transition, for example, a career change, or being about to move from the Netherlands to Indonesia or something like that. How to guide them, to help them navigate that kind of transition. And then I do, I do training. I am involved in training, partly as a trainer, partly as a coach. Many good programs like you have in YEP. There's a knowledge element, a training element, but there's also a coaching function. I do also work as a coach in some training programs as well. And I've also given over the years several trainings, which now, of course, are moving online, but hopefully we'll also meet in person again.
Excellent. Interesting to hear. And I would like to make a kind of bridge to the YEPers, the young experts themselves. As you know, they are mostly in the early career stage, let's say between 24, 32 years old. Could you give a little bit of your lessons, of your own maybe insights in what is especially relevant if you look at leadership development or personal development that you would highlight or stress for those young experts?
I'd love that. And maybe what I can share is three tips. And the first tip I learned from the public communications advisor of the World Bank years ago. And this is the power of three, I call it. Okay. And that simply means that when you do anything, when you give a presentation, you give talks, in the past we would have these PowerPoints with lots of bullets. So people won't remember that. So what I learned and I practiced and I found it extremely helpful is that always focus your message on 3 points. Because if you have a reasonable chance that people will remember. But if you have more than three, they probably won't remember anything, which is not what you want. So condense, if you have more points, see if you can condense them, aggregate them into three. So the power of three.
Yeah, okay, great. Yeah, thanks. You have more maybe to share?
The second one I call also is numbers. It's the 70-20-10 rule. And that comes from the work of the Center for Creative Leadership, which has shared with us that 70%, which is contrary to what we used to believe, 70% of our leadership growth comes from being stretched, taking challenges, taking on challenges on the job. Yeah. So it's really hands-on work, preferably together with others. 10%, only 10%, comes from structured learning. So taking training, could be online, could be on-site, watching TED Talks, other video material. So that's great, reading books. Not that many people read books until the end anymore nowadays. But anyway, that only contributes 10%. So you might wonder, what's the 20 then to make it add up to 100? And the 20 is very important. It's feedback by working together with peers and with coaches and mentors. So it's in working in that we space and learning together.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I would like to come back to your interesting, let's say, concept or theory about the 70-10-20%. I recognize it very much as being a coach and a trainer and working in the same area. But at the same time, I also see in some cases that those challenges can be you know, almost overwhelming sometimes for young people with full of right. ambition. And how would you say, how do we have to deal with the, let's say, the downside of this challenging kind of character?
Huh? Right. Well, you need all of them. So that's the success formula, is to have the 20% in place. So you must have a support system, right? Coaching, yeah. mentoring, peers, people you trust that you go to and you can also get feedback from, which is hugely important.
Yeah.
And you must have a user system. You must look at your mental models and your frameworks that you're going to use to apply in the 70%.
Yeah, because that's what I take from many of those, let's say, management development programs. We are eager to embark on challenging programs or challenging journeys, also as young expert. But I also see, even in Africa, that we, well, stress levels are often now rising and people are sometimes struggling with stress and related effects. And that is really something that, so you're saying we should have some feedback mechanism, or you should have some kind of coaching, actually.
Yeah, coaching and mentoring is critical.
Yeah, yeah.
But so is getting peer feedback as well. Preferably in a structure that makes some sense.
Yeah.
The third part, because that's not enough, of course. Like you point out, I think we need to really work on our skills of how we perceive the world and how we communicate with people. So what I discovered in my career, which caused me to shift, is that most water problems are people problems.
Okay.
Now, you could accuse me of being too simplistic with that, but by and large, I think that is true. That's what I learned through my career, and that caused me to shift. So we could be great scientists, water practitioners, and we understand the complexity of all those big problems we have in our world today. But that doesn't mean that we can actually bring about change. Sure, we can write a project document, a strategy, a roadmap, all those directional documents. We're generally very good at that.
Yeah.
But there's a big difference from writing those and actually making changes happen. And that's where the aspect of studying your people skills, your interpersonal skills, dipping a bit into psychology of leadership and how that works and communication. Yeah. But that's definitely the third point I would like to mention. And you refer to one of my tools is the Work in All Colors method and course.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Nelson Mandela did when he became the first democratically elected president of South Africa. He had this huge challenge of how to bring those different factions, those warring factions in his country together.
Yeah.
And he worked on that for 3 years to learn this language, these seven languages that we define by colors.
Yeah.
So it also comes down to speaking the right language with the right people in the right place.
Yeah.
And we can learn that. And I never learned that in university, but now it's available and we can work on that.
Yeah, no, interesting. And I read about your working in All Colors. But actually, I would also be thinking now that would also prompt, that would also ask for a kind of change of our own educational system, if I would take your suggestions and your own lessons, right? How would you see this? Because the 70-10-20 rules is not maybe easily adopted as in the current systems.
Right.
Yeah?
Right. Yeah. And sometimes some of these modern methods we are now referred to as 21st century skills, right? And thankfully, we see them coming up in education and being used in more places, but not everywhere in the world. And there are many places where, you know, in developing countries where I've lived and I work most of the time, where people don't always have access to that. And perhaps a hierarchy and in the education system, in the government system, in the water organizational system is still very pronounced. And then even if you learn new things, it's still a challenge to influence others to come on board. So there's a lot we can learn, but again, it's young people who have always historically been at the forefront of change and the drivers of change.
Yeah. Yeah.
Think about Einstein. When we now think about him, we think about this older looking man with his chaotic hair, but he wrote his most influential theory when he was in his early 20s.
Yeah.
We don't have, I don't know if I have a picture of him at that age. So, so yappers and even the ones who want to be yappers, there's a big role, a massive role, a mandate to play. And you do now have access to this these new methods and new knowledge on leadership.
Yeah, I take this as a nice plea, actually, what you're making now, eh, for the yappers to, you know, to innovate and to step forward.
Absolutely.
Maybe you're becoming almost to the end of this whole interview. I was interested also to hear about what would be your, let's say, your future views if we look at innovation and leadership. You mentioned them also in your activities. How would you? What would be for you the ideal situation in terms of, well, personal leadership and personal development?
Well, when I think back how I started my career wanting to make a difference and also finding actually the ways to do that, I learned and unlearned and relearned a lot. I went back to school several times. But the challenge now, of course, is that this decade that we have started is the decisive decade. So it's the decade of lot of pressure to make change happen, and also incredible opportunities to do so. And I think that's where young and emerging leaders, and even, you know, up to the edge of millennials in the mid-30s and late-30s, we count on you, you know, because you have to lead, but hopefully in a cross-generational way to get everybody on board to make these changes in an unprecedentedly short time on an unprecedentedly large scale. So there is actually no option. We need to do this, but still people will only do this when they feel it as their calling. But that's also we can influence. We can share with people just like TED Countdown series and you know, Prince William with the Earthshots initiative. That's the world we live in, and we need to make change happen on a bigger scale. So my take on that would be, let's grow more leaders who can do that, both individually, but also together.
Yeah, wow, nice. You're almost raising the bar, I would say, Wouter, in the call, actually, the you know, the motivational call for young leaders to step forward and to take action. It's nice. I would say that's a nice ending, kind of this interview. Before we come to the final questions, would you have any additional point or any additional lesson to share before we come to the end of this interview? Anything
well,
else?
I love leadership work.
that's what I noticed.
for anyone who listens here and say, I need to do more about it, I would first say, I saw that in your YEP program, you have a leadership and a communications track, if I remember correctly. And some subjects or some resources are elective, are optional, and some are compulsory, right?
Yeah.
I would say, if you can respond to that call for this decisive decade, please consider them all things that you will do. Take maximum benefit from this program. And with the 70-20-10 rule in mind, it matters how you take up that challenge. And of course, that comes back first, transformation first. It comes back to your self-leadership, what you are going to do with that, and then bring others on board together with you. Yeah. And I think, you know, the amazing example we have of President Nelson Mandela, who did that in South Africa, using that method of the learning the languages of the other person. He said, when you want change, you need to speak their language. I first thought it's Swahili no. This is the language of the different worldviews that guide people through their life.
Yeah.
So we are all different. And we need to remember that we may look similar on the outside, but inside our operating systems are very diverse. So for us to make a difference, we need to speak the language of your colleague, of your client, of your partner. And that's not automatic. We need to learn.
Now I think very wise words. Thanks, Wouter. As a kind of general last question, I would like you to make available to us some references maybe, huh, for people who are interested in further reading or further information on some of these topics of growing leaders and personal development. Please share them with us. Do you have anything maybe now still to share? Any role model, any book or video?
I can share, maybe not a role model. If I would ask the Yappers to be the role model, that's what we would love to see. Then I would say join the structured programs, opportunities to grow leaders around you. And the community that I've set up, so this is an a pro bono work that I do, not with paying clients, but it's a community of emerging leaders, actually also cross-generational across the world. It's called Grow Three Leaders, and it's based around a challenge. So the URL is growthreeleaders.mn.co. And it's a community. It's not a training course, but it's a community where you break down that challenge that you want to take up in your workplace together with three colleagues in 6 to 8 weeks. So if it's a bigger challenge, break it down into smaller ones and get it done, influence that change and celebrate it. It's what leaders often forget is to celebrate. That would be the reference. I'd be happy to also share you the link later.
No,
you can
great.
Put it in the show notes.
Interesting. Grow Three Leaders. I really like the concept. And we will make them available on our website and on the Yep Basecamp platform. So once again, thanks very much, Wouter, for being with us in this podcast.
Right?
Yeah, it's called the Copcast. This was actually the second Copcast, the Yep podcast on personal growth and leadership. And today we spoke with Wouter Lincoln-Ariens. Thank you all for listening. If you're interested in learning more about developing the capacities of international young experts, please take a look at the YEP website at www.yepprograms.com. Wouter, once again, thanks very much, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you, Paul.